Trinnell, recording for the First United Methodist Church of Decatur and for the Decatur Public Library. Our guests today are Mr. and Mrs. William Bankson. We're recording on March 27, 1986 at the Bankson's home at 3419 MacArthur Road in Decatur, Illinois. Well, Mr. Bankson, I introduced you as William, but how do most people call you?
Bill.
Bill, but you also told me that you had a nickname.
Nobody ever called me that anymore since I left the railroad.
Oh, I see. Well, would you tell us what it is?
Sandy.
And how'd you get that that name?
As a young boy, I sold the Grit newspaper. And that's where I got the name of Sandy.
From the Grit of Sand. Well, that's quite a story. Well, Mr. Bankson, you worked for many years for the Wabash Railroad. What were some of the jobs, the positions you had?
The first job I had was known as a grease cup filler. I took the plugs out of the side rods on the locomotives, broke off a piece of lye grease with bare hands, and stuck it down the hole with my thumb, and naturally that lye grease eat the skin off my thumb, and I always had a sore thumb.
Oh dear. I hope you didn't have to do that very long.
Well, I didn't do that too long. They had some other dirty jobs they wanted me to do. I went from that job to the labor gang, and I worked that job for not too long, because I took every advancement the company offered me.
Well, great. So you went right up the ladder.
I went on from that job to machinist helper, and I stayed on that job for, I expect I was on that job for a couple of years. And they offered me another advancement to what was known as handyman at that time. That was the job where we did all the dirty work for the machinist. And I stayed on that job for 10 years at the Decatur Roundhouse.
Well, the order doesn't matter so much.
Well, I was trying to think.
Did you?
Just what?
Well, let's go on to some of the later jobs.
Well,
we're coming back to this.
After I put in my 10 years as a handyman, I was offered a job as machinist, but I had to start serving my time as a machinist after spending 10 years of doing machinist work.
Oh.
And I thought maybe that they would let me come out on accumulated time, but the union at that time forced me to serve 4 calendar years.
Oh.
Of time before they would put me on the seniority list as a machinist.
Yeah.
Well, I bluffed them out. I stayed and done it.
Oh, you did.
And then after I got my machinist card, I had to go back on a night shift to start my seniority.
Oh, dear.
So, I stayed all through wartime on the 3 to 11 shift. And I worked every job as a machinist, even to the operation of the machine shop. At one time, I was the only machinist in the machine shop. So I had to learn all the different machines in the shop. I'm proud to say I could run any of them.
Well, great.
And during that time, I took on the electric welding trade, and I worked it all of my rest of my career, along with the machine operation and the machine shop. Then I
Is that when you went into the emergency?
No, I wasn't on machine emergency yet at that time.
Uh-huh.
Until a little later,
yeah.
I started in going on wrecker work with the old steam engine,
uh-huh.
the big crane, what they called the big hook.
Yes.
And whenever we would have a wreck, I would go, they'd call me, whether I was on duty at the time or not, and we would stay with the wrecker until we got the wreck back into the Decatur. I had a lot of experiences with the old steam locomotives.
We want to find out more about those later. Did you stay with that job till you retired?
Well, not that job.
Uh-huh.
I was on so many different
yes.
jobs.
Well, it seems to me you were a one-man crew for the Wabash Railroad.
Well, I haven't got to that foreman yet. I was served my time the second time when they changed to diesel locomotives.
Oh, yes.
We had to learn all of our trades over again, which was very interesting.
I'm sure it was.
We went to school on that.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I'll tell you, right now, let's go back and we'll come to your work again. But I'd like to find out where you were born, how you grew up, and how you met Mrs. Banks and the early days. Where were you born?
Born in Bethany, Illinois.
Oh.
March the 2nd, 1902.
Oh.
Born next door to my wife.
Well, so you have known her a long time.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
I was a year old when she was born.
Uh-huh. Well, you taught her a few tricks if you played together.
Well, I can't remember playing with her.
Oh.
So with her.
You got acquainted with her again later then.
Good many years later.
Uh-huh.
I can slightly remember some of the Sunday school days when we were little.
Uh-huh.
But
well, Mrs. Bankson, do you remember those days when he was a little boy next door to you?
Yes, our folks had always been friends
uh-huh.
before, and we lived next door to each other. And we lived there until I was 6 and you were 7, and our folks moved out of town. My folks moved out here to Forsyth for 3 years. His folks went to North Dakota first.
Oh.
His father went for health reasons.
Uh-huh.
And so we were gone 3 years and we moved back and moved into the same house we were in. Dad mm-hmm. had bought it. And his folks then didn't come back until we were in the 6th and 7th grade
mm-hmm.
at school. And they moved in just a block down the street, south from where we lived. So we went to the same church and the same Sunday school and everything, same school. And back then it wasn't consolidated, it was just a town school.
Uh-huh.
So everybody knew everybody.
Right.
And but we really didn't get, we were a little shy of, I was shy of boys and girls at that time. But the summer before I started high school, we dated our, had our first date. From then on, we dated off and on and over a period of time of
5 years.
Well, I was out of high school.
Yeah.
Now, you were married just before the Depression, big Depression of the 30s, weren't you?
We were at that.
And how did you get along?
Well, the Wabash was very helpful then. They voted to all work 4 days and not lay off.
Well, that was very cooperative of them, wasn't it?
So we had 4 days work during the Depression, which was a big help.
Yes.
And we still had problems, though, that he wasn't, I don't think he told you he was making 38 and a half cents an hour when he started over there. And he had advance of pay during that time, but not, he wasn't making the big wages yet. And we had the baby during that time.
So you really had to scrape along.
So it was a little hard. We had some the folks to help out too. We had, I had a brother in school yet. He had a sister that was teaching, but they were getting a slip of paper for their pay.
You mean on 38 and a half cents, you helped your other family too?
Well, he was getting a little more than that then. But we did, yes. I had another sister living here in Decatur. She had three youngsters old, and we had Hilbert. And between us, we helped the folks at home, and this one brother, we got out of high school down there. She took a sister in, and I took the other brother in, and we kept them. So all together, we got through it.
But you were better off than people who didn't have jobs.
Yes, those that didn't have anything. The neighbors thought I was quite well off.
You had one child then?
Yes.
And later?
And before we got out of the Depression entirely, we had the second one. 6 years later, we had Jack.
So you have two boys. We'll hear more about them later, too. Well, let's go back to your railroading, Mr. Bankson. I would like to have you tell us a little more about what you did and how railroading changed during the time.
Well, the steam locomotives was all real heavy repair work. Taking the big wheels out from under the locomotives to repair the boxes and bearings on those, we had to drop them down from underneath in a big pit, slide them over and bring them up to the rails. It was all very heavy work, of course.
You did this by hand?
We did this all by hand and jacks. We had hydraulic jacks, water jacks, to lift the big wheels. And later, they got a traveling crane that helped out an awful lot. And before I got to be a machinist, I operated that crane as a job. And then the diesels came in. We had to learn it all over again. But it was a whole lot lighter work.
You said you had to go to school to learn about the diesel.
Yeah, the company, we had held classes and off-duty hours on this diesel work, to learn all about that. We had several good foremen that were mighty helpful on this schoolwork. And I don't know one of the foremen that we had. The last I knew of him, he had was mayor of Gravette, Arkansas now.
Oh.
The other foreman that is still alive lives here in Decatur by himself. I don't see him. I haven't saw him for a good many years, but I have talked to him on the phone. I saw the other foreman one time. We were passing through his town and called him up and was out to his house and like never got away from him. But going back to the diesel work, we had to learn all of the circuits and everything and the setup of the traction motors and all that that we didn't have, of course, in the old steam days.
What were the advantages of diesel over steam?
Well, it's kind of hard for an old steam man.
You don't think there were any?
Say there were a whole lot of advantages. Of course, there must have been because they stayed. And the changeover from steam to diesel was pretty hard for the maintenance men and the operators too.
Well, trains seem a lot longer now. Is that because of diesel? More cars?
Well, no, not necessarily. They don't pull as many cars now as they did at one time when they first started with the diesels. They learned better, that they could move them over the road faster with less cars. Mm-hmm. And of course today they've eliminated a lot of the positions. They don't have any cabooses on the trains anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have a fireman on the trains anymore. The engineer and the brakeman, the conductors. They don't have very few maintenance men at the dispatch points as they had been.
Did you ever work with passenger trains?
Yes, I worked a number of years before I was, well, even after I was a machinist. I met the passenger trains at the depot when they were running them through. We'd just go to the depot and do the service work on the locomotives and fill them up with fuel from tank trucks and run them right on through the Chicago to St. Louis or Detroit to St. Louis.
That's been a change in railroading, hasn't it?
That has been a great change in railroading. I inspected the locomotives, and it was my job to see that they was all together before they left. I discovered one particular locomotive that had come in from Chicago, making all right-hand, practically all right-hand curves, with one journal burnt completely off, the journal box sitting on the binder, and he had made all those curves with the left-hand wheel against that curve and hadn't jumped the track. The engineer was on the locomotive, ready to go on to St. Louis. He wouldn't believe me when I told him that he couldn't take that locomotive out of town. But I convinced him in a little while when he got down to see what was the matter. Mm-hmm. That was just one of the things that was found. We used to find an awful lot of other defects. Mm-hmm. And we had to make some quick changes to get the trains out without too much delay.
A while ago you said you were on the wrecking crew. What was that?
I was the machinist. There was always a machinist on the wrecking crew, call for the wrecking crew, and the other were carmen and sometimes pipe fitter. And on the, that was with the old steam crane. And whenever they had a wreck, they would call the crew to the depot, and we would leave town. We'd get on the big hook and the wrecker cars at the depot and had our bunk cars and the cook car. There's only one nice thing about the wrecker car. The cook always started frying ham and making sandwiches before we left Decatur. We always eat well until we got back. And we stayed right with those cars and the wrecker until we got back to the town.
Were there many wrecks?
Well, there were several. I was out on several big wrecks. The last steam locomotive wreck that I was on was the last 2,500 locomotive that was run on the North Chicago division of the Wabash. I could tell the man's, I remember the engineer's name on that locomotive well, Cy Merker. I asked his fireman one, while I was on the wreck, where he was at when this wreck started. He said, I was down behind the firebox. I said, where was Cy? He said, he had stuck his head out the window on the other side.
How did it happen?
A journal broke off and stripped one side of this locomotive, throwed all the side rods off of it. So I had to go in there and take the rods off of the other side and block up the main wheels to bring it back to Decatur.
Was anybody hurt in the wreck?
There was no one hurt in the wreck. Of course, it didn't. It just derailed the locomotive. It didn't derail anything else.
That was fortunate.
That was real fortunate.
Do you remember any other occasions when you had to take care of problems?
The last passenger train wreck that I can remember that I was called on was on the St. Louis division. The same thing happened. They broke a main journal and stripped one side of the locomotive. I had to block that, strip that locomotive and block it. They were all the other boxes on it to bring it in.
Did all the cars stay upright on that, Brett?
Oh yeah, the cars all stayed upright. The locomotive, I remember the locomotive didn't derail. They got it stopped before it derailed. That happened down at Edwardsville. We were up a good many hours on those wrecks.
Well, Mrs. Bankson, while he was on these emergencies, wasn't that hard on your family life?
It certainly was a little disturbing at times. We never knew when he was coming and when he was going. We were a one-car family then,
mm-hmm.
and we maybe got calls all hours of the night to, and I had to take him mm-hmm. over there because the boys were at school, or I had to get out in the middle of the night and go get him, bring him home. And then with the boys in school and all, it was another, we always tried to have Sunday dinner together. Some weeks we didn't see him at all. Of course, he didn't go out. That wasn't, maybe he didn't go for weeks at a time, and then he would have a trip out.
When he was on this duty, did he have a regular job and this was extra?
Yes, he worked over here all the time, and then they just took them in from whoever was working there.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes if he was, wasn't the hours he was working, they'd call and take him. But it was always at the wrong time, unexpected.
And you had the problem of taking care of the family and disciplining the children, and
we kept everything going.
Uh-huh. Well, great.
We did that when he was working his regular hours, so he worked 7 days a week an awful lot of mm-hmm. time. And then when he didn't, he had the weekend off every other weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Had Saturday and Sunday off. Sometimes it wasn't always Saturday and Sunday, sometimes it was
during the week.
I remember one time it was Sunday and Monday you had
mm-hmm.
off. But we always tried to, they got up and left at different times in the morning. And sometimes he worked afternoon shift, 3 to 11. The boys were home from school and in bed.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would leave in the morning, or he'd still be sleeping in the morning when the boys left. So there would be a whole week that the boys wouldn't see their dad at all.
Well, that was a little hard on the family,
but,
wasn't it?
No matter what shift it was, we tried to have one meal on Sunday together.
Good.
But I remember one time when Jack had been to Boy Scout camp over the weekend, and the other weekend, I think you were out or something. Anyway, there was a 2 weeks time he hadn't seen his dad. When he was eating breakfast one morning, and I said, mentioned his dad, and he said, by the way, how is dad? I haven't seen him for a while. So it was a little
hard on the family.
But we never complained.
Mm-hmm.
We thought as long as he was
doing his job
right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And of course, such important work to keep the trains running.
And then there were times when he would work the day shift and was home regularly, mm-hmm. and we made up for it then.
What kind of work did you like best of the jobs you had? Or did you have a favorite?
Boy, that's a good question. I really liked the machine shop when I was operating the machine shop. I liked that job the best, operating the machines. But at that time, I was also the electric and acetylene welder. When I operated the machine shop, I also did the electric and acetylene welding for the roundhouse. So I didn't have a chance for much spare time on the job.
You weren't out on the road during
I wasn't on the road.
Mm-hmm.
but very little at that time. That was before they, I was put out on the, before I took this other work on. Trying to think.
Do you remember any other occasions when there were some problems that came up, or any spectacular stories?
I'll tell that later. No, at one time, my wife told the neighbors, this was during the time that I was running the machine shop there, she never would get a new washing machine because every time her machine broke down, I would make new pieces for it.
You even made a gear.
I even cut gears for this machine and kept it running I don't know how many years.
But you did have a new machine just made up of new parts. Well, that was handy to have a machinist around the house.
It was quite a joke. I had had the machine for some time, and it just kept one thing and another. He always made a new part for it.
I was trying to...
I'm trying to think. We'll help you.
Well, maybe that will come to you later. I'll tell you what, let's talk now about the church, and maybe then if you want to come back to the your job, that'll be fine. I know you're members of the First United Methodist Church.
That's right.
How long have you been with the church, have been members of the church?
We've been attending there since in the late 20s.
It's a long time.
Hubert was between three or a little over.
He's your older boy.
When we started there. But we didn't change our membership from down home until Hubert went into the church here, confirmation class, and he was, I don't remember whether it was 10 or 12 then. Mm-hmm. I think it was 12 when they went in at that time.
But you've been with members of that church a long time.
Yes.
Have you noticed changes in the church?
Quite a few.
What are some that you noticed particularly?
Well, one thing, we had a larger membership then, and much larger Sunday school than we have now. Our Sunday school class, the Fellowship Forum, it started just when we started there. We were charter members of the old Come Double class.
Oh.
And then we run into the Fellowship Forum. And that used to be, we used to have 50 to 60 people in that class. And now we are all aged and gone, dropped out, one thing and another. But in some ways it hasn't changed a lot.
Yeah.
The people are still the same. It's always been a friendly church.
Mm-hmm.
We always found it that way anyway.
Do you remember some of the ministers that who served when you were earlier?
We were there when Dr. Crumlin was there.
Yes.
And Dr. Spear, we had been on a cutlet and I'm trying to think of Lloyd. Dr. Lloyd.
Archer?
Yes, he was an assistant. And there's another one back there I missed. When he had his appendix out, the one that was here then.
Oh, you mean when Jack had his appendix out?
Yeah, it must have been. Of course, Hubert didn't.
I can't
think of. Maybe that was wasn't Dr. Grumman. He was here right before or after him.
Well, the ministers have been very helpful.
They have.
Mm-hmm.
everyone I just hate to see leave, mm-hmm. and I think the next one wouldn't. But after we get used to the new one, why?
Then you've had, then you don't want him to leave.
No, I didn't want him to leave.
Well, do you notice any difference in the service, the form of the service, or?
Well, we just had one service back.
Oh, then
we went in there.
And now there's three.
We had Sunday school and then a church.
Mm-hmm.
But we always had a large choir. Of course, our choir is bigger now, but it was for a while smaller than it was. But we had a big choir then, and they had a Wesley choir that the boys sang in. I don't think Hubert ever did. Jack did. He was in a quartet that was in it. And it was quite a thing. Mm-hmm. Their youth group, they had much larger youth groups then than they do now. And
Now your son Hubert came up through the Sunday school and through the church. Estella's a member of the church. And as he takes a group, or he takes makes trips to Mexico, doesn't he? To take gifts to people in Mexico.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
I'll straighten this other though. He hasn't been a member of this church all that time.
Oh,
after he was married, he lived north of Warrensburg. And so they went to church in Warrensburg.
Yes, right.
Until
then he moved back here.
And then he came back to church here. Well, he and Marilyn went to Mexico on a work camp several years ago, and they were, I don't know, the poverty down there just floored them,
mm-hmm.
and they thought they had it so good up here that they just wanted to do something extra, something on their own. So first thing they had to do was learn to speak Spanish. They went down there a time or two without knowing very much, and they had a little trouble getting in down there. There's a lot of red tape to doing anything in Mexico. So they took Spanish lessons. Well, Milligan took some night classes, and they had a private tutor an instructor from out there one winter. And then since then, they've been going regularly. They take clothes. And when they speak of going back in the mountains to the mission, they only make that trip, I don't know if they go more than once a year, maybe twice, but they don't go clear back there every time.
Mm-hmm.
They work through the mission right over the border a little ways. But they love the work they do, and the people down there seem to love them.
Now they drive a truck down?
Yes.
They fill it with donations?
With clothes.
Clothes and other items?
When they started, the first load they took down there, they took everything. They had some bicycles and some typewriters for the missionaries down there. And they had quite a few things. Now, they got in trouble with that load, and it never did get clear to the mission. So
too many people wanted those items.
And they stopped them. They didn't have credentials enough to get through. And I don't know, he came back and he flew down to Mexico City and got things straightened out so he can go through down there. But they don't take those things anymore. They take just clothes. They're not allowed to take toys in down there. I don't know why. But they have a building up there where they store. They pick these clothes up from everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And we get calls here wanting him to come and pick up things mm-hmm. from other churches. And even in, their one daughter lives in Iowa. She has a load over there for him every once in a while. A minister, I understand he's a minister, over there has gone with him on a number mm-hmm. of trips. He's an older man.
Mm-hmm. Well, he does invite people to go
yes.
who want to.
Anybody can go with him. But not very many will.
It's a hard trip.
It's a hard trip. It's a long trip.
And they drive nonstop?
Well, no. He leaves here about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, and he drives into Dallas, Texas in the evening. Marilyn has a brother there. They usually stop there. sleep an hour or two and then go on the next day, and they get over the border then. Mm-hmm. And they're always there 2 days. But the eating and water and things down there, not safe. They have to be awfully careful about that. And the people down there want to do nice things for them, so they give them
food.
They take a bottle of medicine with them when they go,
right.
Because they can't refuse it. Now, when they go back into the mountains there to that mission, it's a real treat for those people to give them a drink of water. They have to carry their water so far. Mm-hmm. So after they've carried it and offer them a drink, they almost have to swallow it.
Right.
So it is a risky business, but they love it.
Well, they are real ambassadors from the United States, aren't they? And from the church, they are certainly an example of a goodwill between our two countries.
They get real nice letters from those people down there. Some of them they know. They even had a baby or two named for them.
Well, it really is a tribute to you and to you, Hubert and Marilyn, that they have built up such a feeling of goodwill. You must have done a good job of raising the boy, especially since you had to do so much of it by yourself.
Well, I don't know. I contributed a lot to keeping them in Sunday school and the church. I thought that was the best I could do. And I had a neighbor one time that said a boy that tuned a horn didn't have time to get in trouble, so I saw that they both had some music. Well, they hadn't kept it up, but they had it.
Uh-huh.
And got them through high school. So. Other than that, I just did the best I could.
Well, you certainly did a good job. Going back to your railroading, do you have any other experiences that you could tell us about?
Well, after the diesels come, they had a habit of sticking one certain bearing and sliding a wheel. And every time they slid a wheel and got a flat spot, they had to come in at such slow speed that the minute they started sliding, they would set them out on the first siding they could get them on. And I don't know whether I was real smart or stupid. I developed a way of burning 4 teeth off of one gear and freeing that wheel so it wouldn't slide anymore.
Well, great. Did you patent that invention?
No, I didn't get a chance to patent that. I got into an awful lot of trouble because these sidings were few and far apart and away from the highway, and I would have to drive a truck in close to get my equipment in, so I could burn this gear off. And then they would, next train that come through, they would tow this locomotive in, because after I cut this one gear, they couldn't use the power to pull it. And I think that I was on every siding on the railroad before I retired, because I was still going out doing that work, just not too awful long before I retired, I was out. I always had to a foreman or some supervisor that they would send with me, supposedly to drive the truck. They would send some with me that I wouldn't let drive the truck. I remember one time they sent a road form of vengeance with me. We left Decatur at little after midnight, he got in the cab, sat down, and put one hand on the seat cushion and the other on the door, and promptly went to sleep. And the fog was so thick, all I could see was the white line on the pavement. And the next time I stopped and woke him up to see where we were at, I was 5 miles past where I was supposed to go.
He wasn't in much help.
Well, he told me just how far back to go, and he was right. Other times, they would get me to a siding close enough to this, or across over, close enough to the wreck that they could get a push car and load my equipment on it and take me down to the wreck. I remember the last steam job I went on the west end, they got me within a little over half a mile of that one, and we had to take our equipment down to the wreck on a little push car. That was west of Springfield. And then I went clear to the river west. I went as far as Forest North. South, I'd go to Edwardsville. When I was laid off here at Decatur, the Wabash Company always took care of me. One point, they sent me to Montpelier, Ohio, as a machinist in the shops there. And I stayed there. I was there pretty near a year. I got a call one night to come into Decatur and report at the superintendent's office for an interview. And I come in and was interviewed for an assistant roundhouse foreman's job. And if I'd have known then what I do now, I would have went back to Montpelier right away, but I didn't. I went back the next day and on my job, and in a few days, I was called to report to Decatur as assistant roundhouse foreman. I come in here in the afternoon. That night, I went to work as outside foreman at the Jasper Street subway, above the Jasper Street subway, to oversee the engines coming in and going out, getting them on the road again. I stayed with that job 1 year before I decided I didn't want any more supervisory work. At that time, I resigned from there, and
you would rather do the work yourself.
I would rather do the work myself than try to get somebody else to do it. So I took a job at the locomotive shop, and wasn't very long until they had a layoff come. And before I was left the shop, the management come to me and told me if I wanted a job, my old job back at Montpelier, Ohio, to get on the night train and report in there the next morning for work. So I did that.
You did.
But I will say that the company always took care of me. I stayed there 3 years, living in a hotel, working the night shift, 11 till 7, and coming into Decatur once a week. Come in on Monday afternoon and go back Wednesday morning. And then I got a call back to Decatur to go to work. And I stayed here at the inspection terminal until I retired from the road in 1967, July the 14th, 1967.
Well, you've had a very long career, and you really have done some wonderful service for the Wabash Railroad.
I run into a lot of different problems with fellow foremen and workers that I really want to forget all that. I was worked, they sent me to Hannibal, Missouri. I was over there for, how long was I over there, Mom?
You went two or three times. You were there 3 weeks one time.
But anyway, I met an awful lot of interesting people, a lot of good people. I remember one certain party that I never will forget. It was the old lady that took in the railroaders that was away from home. I was trying to think
of... You roomed with her?
I roomed with her all the time I was there. She treated me just like I was one of her own kids.
She even kept me when I went over there.
Yes, when my wife would visit me, she wouldn't even charge me for the room.
Well, yeah. But you've had some wonderful experiences.
I had wonderful experiences, wonderful friends.
From where I'm sitting on the wall, I can see a looks like a wall hanging, a rug.
That was a real job doing that.
Maybe I could tell listeners what it is. It's a flag of the Wabash Railroad, isn't
That's
it?
That's right.
It has Wabash on it. Mm-hmm. And the top says, follow our flag. It was a glorious time when the Wabash was here.
That is right. It's never been the same since, and from what I can get from the men working for the road today, it's not the same by a long ways. So I'm glad I got my service in back with the old Wabash Railroad.
Well, great. And when we think of how much the railroad has contributed to American life, I think you can feel very proud.
Oh,
that
yes.
You have contributed so much so for the service. Well,
we had a lot of nice trips on.
And you have enjoyed them. Very good. Well, Mr. and Mrs. Bankson, we certainly have enjoyed hearing your experiences and reminiscences. Thank you very much. And we will certainly cherish all these memories that you have given us. You have been listening to the experiences of Mr. and Mrs. William Bankson, and this is Betty Turnell.